Maybe I can hold it. Is that good? Does that work? Can you guys all hear me? Okay. Good morning, everybody. I'm Piper. I want to thank Jason. Where are you? For inviting me to. There's Jason. Thank you so much for inviting me to come do this. And Margaret invited me 2 years ago. And Adriana, you're always here and just a bright light at all of these events, so thank you for that. And Brittany and Megan, you two were just so sweet to me last night. So thank you, everybody, for just being here and being supportive. I'm so grateful to be here with all of you, and thank you to my mom for coming. Thank you for Bonnie and Bob, and I think my sponsor's on her way. And Amy in the back. Okay, I have a long time to talk, so I'm going to start with the first time I was exposed to this program. I think I was 8 years old, and my mom took me to an open AA meeting in Solvang. I grew up in Solvang. Yes, people live there. And the meeting was in the lunchroom at my elementary school, and it looked like it was on fire because everyone was smoking. You know, I mean, I vaguely remember being in that room and sitting there with my mom, but that was the first time that I was exposed to this program, and people were laughing, and in recovery, you know. And then the next time I was exposed to this program was when I went to Alateen when I was 12. My mom kind of insisted that I go to Alateen. My father's an alcoholic. And when I told him that I was going to Alateen, I lied. I told him that I was going for my mom's second husband, who was also an alcoholic. Because I didn't want to tell him, yeah, Dad, I'm going because you're an alcoholic. Because we don't do that, right? We don't diagnose other people, right? So I lied and said I was going for mom's second husband. The third one wasn't an alcoholic. But she did, my mom wed them and bred them, apparently. So anyway, so I went to Alateen when I was 12, and when I was 13, I moved into a foster home, and that was the hardest year of my life. It was one of the most challenging years. There is not enough money to make me go back and be that age again. Oh, there's Leslie. Hi. It was beyond difficult, but I wanted to go. This family, they had one foster child already, and they had a license to have another one. And the girl who lived there was my friend from school, and her brother had run away. That should have been a clue that it might not be a good idea to go there. But I said I wanted to go there, and I told my mom, and it was rough. That was a bad period in our lives, but she let me go, you know, and I thought it was going to be great, but I ended up being the IP in that house. Do you guys know what that stands for? The identified patient. Everything that went wrong was my fault. Everything. The ice cube trays didn't get filled. It was my fault. The laundry wasn't folded correctly. It was my fault. The pool heater got left on all weekend. It was my fault. I didn't, anyway. So I lived there for a year, and it was really rough. And I couldn't live with my father because he was remarried, and her daughters didn't like me. We didn't get along. So I thought it was going to be great. And I went to Alateen when I was living there. And I, my foster sister, she complained to our foster mom. She said, "Piper always cries when she shares, and I can't." And whatever that means. But there were kids in that room who had it way worse than I did. You know, my father, he just drank too much and left. He didn't hit us. He didn't do anything awful to us at all. And today he's my hero. He's got 35 years of sobriety, and that is one of the biggest gifts in my life. So anyway, that year was rough, and I guess the reason I'm telling that story is because I want to talk a little bit about the amends process. It took me, this is why they say sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, it took me 30 years to get to the point from the, because I lived there when I was 13, and I was 43 when I went, and is that right, Mom? Is that the right math? I don't know, it's math. I was old when I finally got to the point where I could go and make amends to that family, to the husband and wife who had taken care of me in that year. because I was not an ideal child to live in that home. I was a lot of trouble. But I it took me that long to get to the point where I didn't need anything from them. I didn't need them to acknowledge what they had done wrong. I didn't need them to say sorry for anything. But it took a long time for me to get to that point. And, you know, yeah, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. We don't know how things get orchestrated in God's plan. And that one took a long time. I drove, I got very lost on the way there. My nickname is Wrong Way. I have a very bad sense of direction. So I went through Stockton. I went through these mountain towns. I didn't even know where I was. But I got there on time, which was so weird. But I ended up, I met them at their restaurant in Nevada, and I was able to sit with them. And they didn't even know if I was still alive, because it had been such a long time, and I was a mess when I lived with them. So it was this beautiful process, and I honestly, I don't remember what they said, I don't remember what I said, but we were healed, you know, it was healed, and I didn't have to carry that with me anymore, and that's a beautiful thing. That's what this program gives us. It's one of my favorite speakers, he says, how free do you want to be? You know, the steps give us freedom if we're willing to work them. I grew up, my childhood was a little rough. One of my very vivid memories is sitting with my brother watching TV and my father's fist came through the wall. my mom, sorry, I'm going to tell a little bit of your story, but she provoked him quite a bit, and she's very lucky that he never hauled up and hit her. He just hit walls and left. But yeah, that was a very vivid memory, and he punched walls at other times, my father did, because he needed to go, you know, he needed to just have a reason to go out the door and go drink some more, you know, that's what alcoholics need to do. And I didn't understand it at the time, but when they decided to get divorced when I was around 8 years old, I was very grateful. I thought, oh yay, I don't have to listen to the fighting anymore, you know, because it was not fun to listen to the screaming and yelling. So they got divorced, and we stayed in Solvang. I don't know, my mom had a few other boyfriends, we moved. My dad rescued us a couple times, still not sober. I'm sorry, I'm all over the place. Growing up in Solvang was interesting. The family down the street didn't like me playing with their daughters because I'm only a quarter Danish, and you know, they were full-blooded Danes. So I grew up feeling a little different, and like I didn't fit in. And you know, that's just part of my story. It's a lot of us in all the different programs, we talk about not feeling like we fit in, you know, but I fit here. I fit here, and I'm so grateful for that. Yesterday, I got to hear three amazing speakers, and all of them seemed to have that as part of their message, you know, that we belong here. I mean, you look around, I mean, I don't know if I would have partied with you guys, probably, so, you know, if we would have hung out and had a good time, probably. But we get to be here. I get to be here. And alcoholics get to be here when they say, I'm an alcoholic, I belong here. And nobody gets to tell anybody that. My mom made me come here. She did. She made me go to Alateen when I was a kid. And thank God, because the seed was planted. You know, this program has saved my life. There's no question that this program has saved my life. There's a page in the big book. Can I talk about the big book? Yes? Okay. There's a page in the family afterward that talks about when we're willing to share our stories, how it can save someone else's life. You know, if I'm willing to say, I did this and I got through it, and you can too. You know, that's really powerful, that we can save lives with this thing just by being willing to tell our stories, you know. So I've grown up around this program. I left for a long time and went down my own path. Oh, here's a good story. When I was in Alateen, our sponsor was this man named Cliff. He was this amazing guy. He had a really cool dog, and he had 25 years of sobriety, and he was popular. I can't think of a better word to say it, in AA in Santa Barbara. And he decided, after 25 years of sobriety, one night he decided that he needed to go get drunk. And he went to a bar, and he got in a bar fight, and he was killed. And that was the first time that I lost someone due to this disease. Because, you know, the guy who stabbed him didn't kill him. The knife didn't kill him. His disease killed him. His alcoholism killed him, because it told him it was a good idea to go get drunk that night. And that's what that's what alcoholism does to alcoholics. It tells them that it's a good idea to go get loaded, you know, to go to that bar, to go to wherever they need to go. And alcoholics forget all the horrible things that happen, you know. And part of what this program, what Al-Anon teaches me to do, and hopefully some of you, is to not take that personally. You know, it's not about us. You know, that there was that movie, If You Loved Me, is that the title? And, you know, we think that. God, if you cared about me, you wouldn't do that. If you loved me, you would not do that. You wouldn't go to the bar again. You wouldn't crash the car. You wouldn't get arrested. You wouldn't sleep with that person. You wouldn't do all these horrible things if you loved me. But it has nothing to do with that. You know, this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. That's what the Big Book talks about. And it doesn't make sense. Scientists cannot make sense of alcoholism. So if they can't, how do I think I can? You know, we can't. We can't make sense of it. And it does things. It destroys so many lives. And the fact that we're all sitting here on a Sunday morning talking about how to be okay in the middle of what is quite often chaos and drama, because that's what comes from alcoholism, you know. But we don't have to participate. I don't have to participate. I have a son who's, I think he's sober right now, but I'm not sure. And I wanted to send him a text this morning and say, hey buddy, I'm speaking at a convention this morning, and I'd love to have the correct information about your state of sobriety. I didn't do that. I didn't send it, because this program teaches me not to do things like that. But I wanted to, you know, but I realized that that's just self-will. That's wanting me to, you know, to get it right and to be able to say, well, I don't know. I saw him the other night. My father and I took him to dinner the other night, and he looked better than I thought he would. He looked better than the last time I saw him. But he's had four ODs on fentanyl that I know about. He might have had more. I don't know. He's been in and out of a few rehabs now, and he knows where to go. He's been going to meetings since he was in my tummy. So, and I've been twitching sitting in meetings since I got pregnant, listening to people tell their stories, thinking, oh God, he's going to do that. Oh God, he's going to do that too. You know, I mean, my mom's been sitting next to me watching me this whole time. And when my son was born, when he started walking, it was when I started going to Al-Anon again. And man, I need to be here so badly. Because it helps me, this program helps me to be okay no matter what's going on. You know, my job as a person in recovery is to have a good life no matter what's going on, right? And that's what this program gives us. We get to enjoy our lives even though the people we love most are hurting themselves. We get to be here and have a good life, you know, and I get to choose that. My mom always says this to me. She says, if you made a list of all the things that you're dealing with right now, you wouldn't even believe it. And it's true, I'm afraid to make that list. Because just the one thing with my son is enough, right? But I'm also at the end of a divorce. It hasn't been ugly, thank goodness, but it's been really long. It's taken a long time. My daughter's not speaking to me. She's very angry that I left her father. I needed to leave a 20 plus year marriage, and that happened in September of 2019. And when I left, I didn't know where I was going to go. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew I needed to leave. And when I made that decision, things kept unfolding in amazing ways. I dog sat for someone who went to Israel on a 2-week trip. I got to stay in her lovely home and take care of her beautiful dogs. I stayed at my mom's house a few times. I went to a few different Airbnbs. I picked one that was so awful, and I chose it because I wanted to save money, but I looked at the pictures again. I thought, no, I don't have to do that. I don't have to go stay in squalor, right? So I found another place that was the same price, and it was beautiful. And I got to stay there, and this is one of my favorite stories. I'll probably cry, but my mom came to visit me, and I was in my pajamas. I was in the driveway getting stuff in and out of my car, and she saw me, and she said that she thought, there's my Piper. That marriage was really hard on me. I don't want to take his inventory because that's not why I'm here. That's not what I want to do. But it was rough. And a big part of what was so hard was the way that we were parenting our son, and not agreeing on any of it, and being constantly undermined and gaslit. Anyway, you guys know what I'm talking about. He was gaslighting me all the time, and I was starting to feel crazy. And that's when I left and I called my parents. Both of them said, "Oh my gosh, you sound so much better." And that was just over the phone, but they knew, and they were both really scared for me. I think if I had stayed, I would have ended up in a little ball curled up in the corner of the room, crying. And I got out just before COVID happened. I can't imagine having to be stuck in that house with my ex. He's sober, but he doesn't do meetings. He doesn't use this program, and he needs this program desperately. He lost a brother and sister to ODs. He lost his father to suicide. His first girlfriend OD'd. I mean, he's surrounded by loss from this disease, but he doesn't think he needs Al-Anon. So God bless him. I pray for him all the time. But I couldn't stay anymore. I couldn't do it. I couldn't try to make it work. Because when we were at a marriage counselor trying to make it work, and she suggested reading some pages in the big book, those pages that I was talking about, the family afterward. And he said, "What good will that do?" And that right there was like the nail in the coffin. I just said, I can't do this anymore. Because if I have to try to sell this program to someone, no. Because that, we don't do that here. It's attraction rather than promotion, right? So I didn't want to have to say, "You have to do this thing. You have to go to Al-Anon or some." You know, I didn't want to have to do that, right? So I left, and I know I'm going all over the place. But my daughter is not speaking to me because I left her father. She's very angry, and I probably won't be invited to her graduation. So oh well. Oh, I haven't even addressed this. Do you guys want to know how this happened? Sorry, I forgot. I just moved on the 11th. I've been in my old new house. I'm making it new. I moved back into the house where I had my babies and I was married. I got that house in the divorce settlement. He got the house in Topanga. I got the house in Woodland Hills. So I'm remodeling, and we removed one of the toilets because we're remodeling the bathroom, and it was in the back of the truck, and I wanted to smash it. Because smashing stuff is fun, right? So I had a sledgehammer, and I hit it a couple times, and I had the biggest smile on my face. My dad said I just looked so happy. And then I hit it a third time, and a piece of it flew at my hand and sliced my knuckle, and I probably have to have surgery. So, you know, not a great whatever. I wasn't safe. I didn't protect myself as I should have. But apparently, my higher power wants me to let go a little bit more. So. So that's how that happened. But I'm back in this house, and my father has been here for almost 3 weeks now, and He's been helping me. That's not even a strong enough word. He's totally being my hero right now. He's hanging my draperies. He's painting my kitchen and putting up crown molding. And I mean, just being amazing. Such a hero. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. Most of my heroes are sober alcoholics. A lot of them aren't here anymore. Sandy Beach is an amazing speaker. Jack Prose. Who else? There are so many. And my father, you know, my father. The fact that he gets to be who he is because of this program. You know, I mean, he overdosed on Valium and alcohol and died. They revived him, but he was dead. And they brought him back to life, and then he got sober. And my parents didn't speak to each other for 10 years after they got divorced. But when he got sober, he came and made amends, and they got to make amends to each other, and now they're great friends. My parents are friends now, and that's this program. This program gives us our families back, you know? And the stuff with my kids right now, I just need to remember that nothing's permanent, you know? I hope that my daughter will eventually want to speak to me. She must be tired. It takes a lot of energy to hold a grudge for that long. I should know, too, because I held one for quite a while. But, I just have to pray for everybody, you know? And know that, again, my job as a person in recovery is to make this look good, you know, to make recovery look good, not to suffer, not to say, oh my gosh, this is so awful, and you know, do the Al-Anon salute. I don't need to do that today. I get to have a beautiful life. And one of the things I struggle with most is what people think of me. That's one of my biggest challenges. And I have to pray about it a lot to turn that over, to be relieved of that self-obsession, because really nobody is thinking about me as much as I think they're thinking about me. So I constantly need to say, oh well, whatever, you know, let it go, give it to God. And it really helps. I have a sponsee who says we need to get out of the way and let God come in and do his thing. And I don't know what God is. I don't know. It's just big and beautiful and loves me like crazy. I know that to be true. My higher power has given me so much, such a beautiful life. And it's because I'm willing to show up here, you know. If I ever get to the place where I think, yeah, I don't really need to go to meetings anymore, I'm okay. I've been doing this thing long enough, you know. I will be really scared if I get to that point. I hope I never get to that point. That's one thing that's always been constant in my recovery. I love going to meetings. Whatever, I'm in three different fellowships. And I love meetings because this is where God is, you know. I don't go to church. This is my church. I get to hear and see God through you guys, you know. It comes when you speak, when I see things happen in your lives, that's God to me, you know. And it's such a miraculous thing that we get to be here. And this program shapes my life. I don't try to fit it in, right? It shapes my life. I go to lots of meetings. I've been mostly on Zoom since the world went sideways, but this is lovely to be here with all of you and get hugs. Oh my gosh, how special. It's been rough this whole time since I left my home, and then I got to live in this really sweet little apartment in Santa Monica for 2 years, and now I'm back in my old new house. I'm making it new. And, you know, this is something that I say all the time too, figure it out is not one of our slogans. I don't have to figure it out, right? I just get to show up. And I get to do left foot, right foot, and do what's next, and say, okay, God, what's next? What's next? instead of, oh shit, oh my God, you know, what do I, oh sorry, I'm swearing from the podium. anyway, instead of being scared, which is very easy to get scared because there's a lot of scary stuff going on in my life, but I don't like to live there. You know, I've been having mini meltdowns every day. I cry at least once a day, but I don't get stuck there. You know, I let it happen. I reach out to somebody, I reach out to God, and then I'm okay. And then I get on with my day. And, you know, there's a song that I've been listening to. It's a Tracy Chapman song, and the first line is, I've done so many things wrong. At this point in my life, I've done so many things wrong. I don't know if I can do it right. And I put that on and I cry, and then I get on with my day, you know? And that's it's good. It works for me, you know? Because instead of saying, oh, don't feel that way, don't let that happen, don't be sad, you're okay, be strong, I can let myself go there because I know I'm not going to get stuck there. That's the trick, right? Because if I think when depression, I don't have depression, I'm so grateful that I don't. It runs in my family a little bit, and I'm so grateful that I don't struggle with that. That I know that feelings have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I want to share that with all of you too, because when we're in it, we think, oh my God, I'm gonna be here forever. I'm gonna feel like this forever. It's never gonna go away, oh my God. But when I remind myself, this is, I'm gonna feel this way for a little bit, and then it's gonna get better, and then it's gonna get bad again, and then it's gonna get better again. I just gotta ride the roller coaster. I love roller coasters, by the way. I love them. So when I use that as a metaphor, it's okay. And I mean, the whole smashing the toilet thing, I'm trying to figure out what the message in that is. I want it to be more funny than it is, but I don't know. I was getting some aggression out when I was smashing it, and I recommend that, by the way, go smash stuff. But wear protective gear, please, because this is not fun. I was in the ER for over four hours, and I just feeling stupid. But you know, I just kept saying, "Okay, God, I guess this is what you want me to do right now." And I do that a lot. You know, the other day I spilled a whole pot of tea all over my stove, and my dad was laughing at me, and I said, well, I guess the stove was supposed to be cleaned right now. And I try to do that with things rather than, you know, tell myself I'm stupid or made a mistake, or I just say, okay, this is what God wanted to happen right now. And when I do that, things are easier. You know, things unfold more easily. I have no idea. My mom always talks about, she says, you know, we plan for A, B, or C, but usually X, Y, or Z happens, right? So I can't plan for anything. I mean, I can try to organize things. When I first came in here, there was a bunch of trash everywhere, and I was trying to sweep it up with my feet and, you know, make the chairs look nice and be a bit of a control freak because I wanted the room to look nice for you guys. And somebody else, I think it was Dawn, right? You helped me too. So we tidied up a bit in here because things like that matter. I get a little edgy when things aren't, when they don't look the way I want them to look. But again, I need to turn that over because my house is a construction zone right now. So I need to just say, okay, God, help me be okay with the condition of things right now because it can't be perfect. I want it to look like Pottery Barn. Right, but that's not happening, not yet. It's close, but not quite yet. Anyway, how much time have I got?
An hour.
No. Yeah. 10 minutes. Okay. So when I told you already when I left the marriage that I was in, I couldn't have done that without this program and my higher power. There's no way that I could have done that. But I had a meeting with a couple of people, and I told them a little bit about what was happening in my home. And the looks on their faces, their chins were almost on the table, because they said, you can't live like that. And I had no idea. I did not know how bad it was until I saw their reactions to what I told them. And I think I see a lot of people nodding their heads. We don't know until we talk about it and someone else goes, oh my gosh, What, you can't live that way. So when I made that decision, and my higher power carried me through every moment of it, and is still carrying me, you know, I go to a lot of Zoom meetings, and there are people on there who are carrying me. I've never met them, but they're carrying me through this. You know, they're there for me. I reach out to them, and they're there. And making myself available to that help is challenging for me, you know, to say, I need some help, I need some support. I don't like needing help. I don't like feeling that way. But when I'm willing to say, I need some help, I always get it. I always get it, every time. So, I know that through my recovery, through my willingness to keep showing up here and do these steps, this perfect recipe, you know, there are words in the last three steps that sought and continue and improve. You know, those are words that keep going, right? They keep going. We don't stop. We don't finish this thing and say, oh yeah, I did all the 12 steps, I'm done. That's not how I do this thing. I have made these steps a working part of my life, and I'm so grateful for that. You know, I hope this doesn't sound like I'm bragging. They're kind of automatic. They kick in, you know, the principles of the steps. I just yesterday I spoke with my sponsor who's here, and we didn't talk to each other for quite a long time because something happened and I got uncomfortable, and I kind of I very much distanced myself from her. I stopped calling. I was only texting, and it was a thing where I felt I got very defensive. I will totally admit it. I was very defensive, and I felt like I had done something wrong, and I didn't like somebody telling me that I had done something wrong. But she didn't. She was just giving me her opinion, but I took it as being told I was doing something wrong. So I took myself away from that relationship, and I'm very sad that I did that. But we got to make it better. We got to talk yesterday. I think it was yesterday or maybe the day before, and she's here now. And I wouldn't know how to do that without this program, you know? And she reached out to me, God bless her. She said, why did we stop talking? And I called her, and we got to have this beautiful conversation, and I got to be honest, and she got to be honest, and it got fixed. That's what happens here. When I apply these steps to any problem, any difficulty in my life, I get beautiful results. And things work out in ways that I could never imagine. You know, it's the XYZ thing again. I don't know what's coming next. Thank you. I really don't. None of us do. I mean, it would be really nice to know what's gonna happen next, but I don't know. I know my father's going back home tomorrow. I'm gonna miss him like crazy. It's been such a gift to have him here with me. And I wrote a prayer, and I left it on the counter, and I had him call me and read it to me. It's on my phone, but I'm trying to remember it. It's, Dear God, I am open and willing to whatever you have in store for me today. Please help me show up. Please help me to get out of your way and let you come in. Help me to pause and listen for your wisdom. I love you and I love my life. These tears are really gratitude. It's overwhelming gratitude. I would not have anything in my life today if it weren't for this program, and for, thank God, for the willingness I have to show up here and tell you guys what's going on. And, you know, I don't do it perfectly. Thank God. You know, in chapter 5 it says we are not saints. Not even close. But I do it the best I can, and that's a lyric in that song too. I'm doing the best I can. And that's all I have to do, you know? Just show up here and keep doing the deal and listen to you guys, listen to your beautiful stories of recovery. And not take anything personally. You know, this disease, alcoholism is, it does not mess around. And it, clearly, if you're here, you're probably in pain because you love someone who's an alcoholic. It's painful. But I don't have to live in that pain. You know, I get to come here and be healed and have such a beautiful life. I'm beyond grateful to Bill and Bob and Lois and Dr. Paul and Max and all the people, the first 100 who created this unbelievable program that saves lives every second of every day. You know, I hope that you let this save your life and trust that it will work in your alcoholics' lives as well if you let it. It's a beautiful program. Thank you so much for my beautiful life. Thank you for listening.